Hello, everybody. Welcome to Geek Tyrant Weekly Podcast. This is episode number 75, and today we are going to discuss all things geek, movie-wise anyway. Sometimes we talk about video games, sometimes TV. But today we are going to discuss the box office numbers. We're then going to get back and do a little thing that we used to do called box office history, which, you know, should be fun. We're going to review Get Him to the Greek because we've all seen it, which is a rarity. Usually we go out to different movies to, you know, talk about it, but this is one we've all seen, so we can all share our input on that. Awesomely funny film. Some of the news we're going to talk about this last week, Christopher Nolan talking about not bringing the Joker back. Also talking about his Superman concept that his screenwriter David Goyer came up with. And then Patrick Stewart has been knighted. So that's interesting. Good for him, you know? Good for him. One day, maybe we'll be knighted. Do you have to be English to be knighted?
It's yes. Always been a goal of British. Mine to be knighted, and then I found out that you have to be British, so it's kind of a dream crushed for me personally.
Yeah, I forgot what the highest thing that they can dub you with.
Actually, I think there's one caveat to that, and it's if you save the Queen's life, you don't have to be British, and you can be knighted in that case. So I've always...
You've got a plot.
Right.
Some way to save the Queen's life.
Now, do you have to be like a... Can you have British blood in you, or do you have to be, like, living in England?
I'm not sure.
I think you have to be born, kind of
yeah,
like
probably
president.
Like a citizen or something.
That's a shame. It's a shame. All these knights in the world that won't be knighted. And then we're going to quickly talk about Tom Cruise working on his Les Grossman movie, which should be interesting to see come to pass. And then we'll talk about the movies that are coming up this next week, and have our pick of the week. And all right, why don't we introduce the panel? I'm your host, Dr. Venkman, and today in our panel we have Mazer. Hello,
hey.
Mazer.
How you guys
doing?
Would
you like to introduce yourself to the people?
iPhone 4.
4?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
The iPhone.
I wish
4.
They had the new Mac Pros or iMac or something, but. That's probably happening later on this month or so.
Mazer is very into the techie side of things.
At least Mac.
At least Mac.
At least Mac. Yeah.
We also have Ben P. on the panel. Ben.
What's up, man? How you doing?
How are you?
Doing well, sir.
Awesome. It's good to hear. Then we got P. Vader. What's up, P. Vader?
Venkman, what's up, brother?
You know, just kicking it old school.
See another life, brother. Can't help myself every time I hear that.
And we have Desmond from Lost.
That would be awesome.
He can do anything.
Yeah, he can. So we're going to quickly go through the box office numbers here real quick, because we can. Number one this week, third week in a row, Shrek Forever After. This is a movie I am dead set. I'm not going to go see it. I'm not. People have told me that it's a great movie. And it's making a lot of money, but Shrek Forever After just doesn't, you know,
all right,
tickle me in that way.
Let me ask you something. Are you not going to see it in theaters, or are you not going to ever see it?
Chances are I will get it when it comes out on Blu-ray or DVD.
Okay.
I'll put it on for my kids, and then I'll probably leave
the All right, I was just trying to determine your level of stubbornness. And
I'll tell you, the closest I'm going to get to watching this movie is when I'm taking a road trip with my family and the kids are going to be watching it in the car and I will be forced to listen.
Okay.
That will be the time that I see it. I've heard it's great, but I just don't believe people.
Even if it is great, I feel like this entire franchise that's run its course all the way through, and they should just focus on working on original ideas the way Pixar does, or try to, you know, knock off more Pixar ideas like they had tried to do in the past. I don't know.
I think they should just try and do something totally different than these fairy tale type movies. Let's get into some adult animation.
I think
stuff.
That would be cool as well. Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, kids are a big market, but you know, Let's make some, you know, nice, action-packed, rated R adult animated movies.
South Park 2.
Yeah. That made $25.4 million this week. It's been out 3 weeks now, and in total it's brought in $183.2 million. So they've surpassed the budget they had. They're in the They're making a profit now, so congratulations, DreamWorks Animation, for that. Number two this week, Get Him to the Greek, made $17.5 million. We will get into that as well. Killers, this is the movie with that one girl
Catherine
and that one
Heigl.
Guy, and they both are supposedly good-looking, and they shoot people,
and somehow
and it's supposed to be like a comedy.
Yeah.
You all know what I'm talking about. Look, I know who's in it. I just don't care.
All right, number Mazur, Mazur brings up a good point real quick. $75 million for the budget for this thing? Are you kidding?
Oh, is it? Yeah. That, wow. Look at that. Made 15.8. They're on their way to not making their budget back.
Yeah,
so.
15.8, that probably just took care of the actors.
Yeah, Katherine Heigl's trailer cost $15.8 million.
Killers will drop down to number 11 next week. That's my prediction. Okay, number four, Prince of Persia is hanging in the top five at $14 million. They are not going to make their money back.
No, not a chance.
It's not looking good.
$200 million budget, 2 weeks in, they've made only $59.6 million. And I just don't see this movie making any more.
Yeah.
It's not going to make $14 million next week, you know that.
It doesn't have the good word of mouth or just the staying power to be able to... If people haven't seen it by now, I feel like people aren't going to see it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And then we've got Sex and the City 2, which made $12.3 million. And I'm shocked that the budget on that was $100 million.
Hey, do you remember last week when I joked about Sex and the City prequel with them in elementary school? Apparently, there's actually talk of a Sex and the City 3 prequel with Carrie, whatever her name is, Sarah Jessica Parker, as a teenager.
You shut your ass, sir.
I wish I could. It is unfortunately wide open.
Well, that's a shame.
But is it direct to video?
I'm pretty sure they're talking theaters on this one.
Okay.
It's bad news.
Weird.
There's a couple other new films that came out this week, like Marmaduke, that hit number six, $11.5 million. We usually don't go past the top five. Splice came out this week as well. That's the horror movie, and that made $7.3 million. That's not good for being in 2,450 screens.
Yeah.
$7.3 million, that's a fail right there. But... budget is only $30 million, so maybe it'll make its money back.
I've heard it has the makings of a cult classic, possibly in DVD and things like that.
It doesn't have the appeal. There, you see it and you don't see cool robots. You don't see... It doesn't seem as if there's this great dark horror element. It just feels like there's this weird creature and you're going to be staring at it the entire time through this film. And then I think the three-hour movie length just... it seems... like this huge sci-fi opus that you're just gonna have to sit through and watch all this stuff put at you.
Dr. Brinkman, do you know the female lead of Splice? Is it Sarah Polley?
Yeah, it's Sarah Polley.
Okay.
Yeah. Why?
I don't know.
Do you have a crush on her?
Not necessarily, but I do like her a lot.
Do you want her phone number?
Yeah, if you've got it, I'll take it.
For
yeah,
you.
I'm a fan of both her and Adrian Brody, but. For some reason, Splice just doesn't... Maybe it's the marketing, maybe it's whatever. It just doesn't really appeal to me that much. I'm sure I'll get around to seeing
it eventually.
You know
what? Maybe it's just their awful acting in the movie. Because they are pretty freaking terrible in it.
Well, that's right. I forgot that you've actually seen this and didn't really care for it that much.
Don't ever forget that again.
Noted. Duly noted.
Okay, so now we're going to kind of go into this new... It's not new. It's
old.
We used to do this... When we first started the podcast, it was really fun. I figured today would be a good day to bring it back. This weekend in box office history. And I was thinking, you know, let's go back 25 years. Let's go back to 1985.
Ooh, that's a good year.
It is. It's a great year. It's a great year. So this week in box office, this weekend in box office history, what do you guys think came in number one in 1985?
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
No. You're wrong, sir.
I have no idea. Halloween 3. I don't know.
No.
I feel like I saw this on the website. So when you said 25, I think that was too big. Goonies?
Wrong again.
What?
Yeah, really? I know.
Okay.
I was angry myself when I saw that it didn't hit number one. 1985, this last weekend, Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Nice.
Top of the charts. For nice. Its third weekend in a row. And it made $10.2 million, and at that time, with its third week, and it made $70.4 million in about 19 days. Goonies came in second place. It was its first weekend opening up. It lost to Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Nice guess, Mazer.
That's a shame, though, that Goonies came in second place. You know,
yeah, but
it's Goonies.
But it's Stallone.
Yeah, both things.
But it's Goonies. That made $9.1 million, and that was shown in 1,705 theaters at the time.
When are we getting that sequel?
Probably never.
It seems like it at this point, because
always been talk about it. It would be great to see, just to see where the characters are in their lives now, but I don't think we'll ever see it. I think it's just talk. I don't think we'll... If it does go beyond...
I think Richard Donner is just getting way older, too. I don't... If they did it, they should have done it already. Or they should be doing it very, very soon.
And Josh Brolin, Jonah Hex aside, is actually kind of blowing up into a borderline A-list star these days, so it seems unlikely
he
would... go back to that well unnecessarily. So,
but yeah, so that was cool. I like the Goonies. I wrote up a little post today on it, professing my love for the film. So, I don't know.
The
fact
that you had a Rambo 4 means obviously, you know,
anything's possible.
Yeah.
And let's see, Fletch came in third place.
That's a great movie.
I love Fletch. Fletch is a great film that made $6.3 million at the time, and then there's, you know, a Rolling Stone movie called Perfect, which opened up at 4.2. A View to Kill. Yeah, then there's these movies. Brewster's Millions came in at number six. You gotta love Brewster's Millions.
Oh,
Beverly
yeah.
Hills Cop.
Nice.
And then Harrison Ford's Witness came in at number 10.
Man, there's actually, like, a lot of fairly popular films on that list that you just read off there. Like, things that hold up pretty well and that are generally well-regarded even today, which is surprising for a random
week. I'm going to go through the top 12 real quick.
Okay.
Just because we got Rambo, Goonies, Fletch, A View to Kill, Perfect, Brewster's Millions, Beverly Hills Cop, Witness with Harrison Ford, Police Academy 2, their first assignment, Desperately Seeking Susan, Code of Silence, and the Care Bears movie.
Okay.
So,
obviously,
that's this
Care
weekend
Bears
in box
angry.
Office history, 25 years ago in 1985.
Cool.
Unfortunately, Goonies didn't make number one.
Well, thanks for the time travel, Dr. Megman. Appreciate
that.
Yeah,
right? Isn't it good to reminisce?
That is. We should definitely start doing that on a more regular basis. That was fun.
You really should. All right, get him to the Greek.
The music business is failing. I need some brilliant ideas right now.
Two words. Mexican Jonas Brothers.
Don't talk.
How about ringtones on urinals? I call them flush tones.
This is serious out here. I got six kids. You know how many Air Jordan 6 black kids wear?
You. We need ideas.
Next month is the 10-year anniversary of Aldous Snow live at the Greek Theater. We could put on an anniversary concert. He's rock music personified.
I'm a motorist.
I want you to go to London to pick him up, then bring him back here for the show at the Greek.
Can you handle it?
Definitely.
It's love.
I just want you to know that I respect you.
Okay, now that's making me feel uncomfortable.
We all saw it.
Yeah.
We all liked it, I believe. I don't think anyone had any complaints.
I think no one disliked it.
And yeah.
some loved it more than others, and...
Yeah, I think, I mean, I was talking to Lola, who writes for the site as well, and she was saying that she went in with very low expectations and really, really enjoyed the movie. I went in with pretty high expectations, almost unreasonably high in hindsight, just because, as most people probably know by now, Get Him to the Greek is a spinoff of Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which came out in 2008, I think, and Nicholas Stoller directed that film as well. Sarah Marshall was his directorial debut, featured directorial debut, and this is his second movie. So, you know, considering Jason Segel, who wrote Sarah Marshall, was a producer on this film, Judd Apatow was a producer, you know, it had kind of the same elements involved, and Aldous Snow, Russell Brand's character, is the eccentric, sex-crazed rock star, was all returning. I figured this was a, like, a surefire, you know, awesome movie. So my expectations were a little bit higher than they should have been. I was a bit disappointed. I ended up liking... I still liked it, though. That's, you know, that's what Mazer was saying. We all liked it. I just didn't... I should have tempered my expectation. I, you know, I just fell into that same trap of thinking it was going to be better than it actually was. But it didn't have the same heart as Sarah Marshall. That was my biggest complaint with it. And it felt a little bit like kind of capitalizing on the Hangover formula of just going through the craziness of, you know, making a stop in Vegas and all these other things. I don't really want to get too much into spoilers unless we actually want to get into it, but...
Well, I mean, really, what's there to spoil? It's a comedy. It's
Yeah, you know what's going to happen, pretty much.
Well, yeah, it's just one of those things.
Yeah.
But, I enjoyed it. I thought it was... I laughed more than I thought I would. I didn't go in. I wanted to see it. Everything I saw in it looked hilarious, but I still wasn't sure that they were just, you know, showing the funny parts in the trailer or the film clips and stuff like that. So,
yeah,
I wasn't really sure what I was going to expect. So I went in like neutral. I really didn't have any expectations. I didn't think it was going to be good. I didn't think it was going to be bad. It's rare that I go into a movie, you know, with. You know, no previous thought other than, it looks like it'll be funny, but
yeah,
maybe it won't. Because comedies, you know, comedies like this can easily fail. So, but I was impressed, and I laughed my ass off through the whole film.
There are
a couple awkward moments, you know?
Yeah.
But most rated R comedies these days throw in the awkward moments because that makes the movie awkward.
Oh, I thought when you said awkward moments, I thought you were talking about some of the pacing aspects. I felt that sometimes it could be a little choppy, and it would go from like one scene to another, kind of choppy. You know,
there was virtually not a transition. I was talking about more of like the uncomfortable threesome.
Okay. Yeah.
You know,
I'll agree.
We won't say. We shouldn't say any more than that. For me, I loved Forgetting Sarah Marshall. It was a movie. I love that film. And when I was describing Get Into the Greek to someone who asked me about it, I said it's in the same vein. It has the same type of humor, but it's not a completely mindless comedy. It does have some intelligence. It really does. Yeah, and I've got and
it's a,
you know,
it's a smart comedy.
Yes, and Aldous Snow out of Sarah Marshall was a character you're like you loved when he was on the screen. He was this cool guy. You wanted to hate him, but he was so unbelievably cool. And the character has the same experience. And you're like, man, wouldn't it be great if there was an entire movie with this guy? And I think they delivered exactly on what my expectations were for it. I was like you, Venkman, where I was pretty neutral. I saw some clips and stuff with it, but I didn't really have the highest of expectations with it. Mostly because Jonah Hill was the star of it, and he's like the lead. And
yeah.
I've yet to see a film where I really just go, man, Jonah Hill. I'm there. he's not on my list of actors that I feel like I have. I was there for the Alice Snow character, and I think a lot of people were for.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so, I don't think anyone was there for Jonah Hill.
Yeah, so but, seeing him in the lead, just, I don't know.
Well, that being said, though, I was there. I was right there with you on that one, Mazer. I was not looking forward to Jonah Hill's performance, but I thought he did a pretty good job.
Yeah, he did.
Like, I was surprised, pleasantly surprised with how he ended up in the film.
He was a character that was required out of that. You know,
it was against type for him. He doesn't normally play the straight guy. He's normally the wild party guy or whatever.
Yeah.
Super bad and all these other things. But
well, I think it's interesting because out of all the characters in these Apatow films, all the actors, if you think of a film, you can think of a film where they've been the serious guy, and you can think of a film where they've been the crazy guy.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you have these, you know, you've got Paul Rudd, who's in I Love You, Man. He's kind of rigid, but then he's in Forgetting Sarah Marshall as this totally stoned surfer guy, and he's been in other films where he's just been weird. So I mean,
yeah, it's a cool group, and they seem to work well together, and at least give themselves some opportunity for growth and things of that sort within the realm of their own universes that they kind of consistently build. But yeah, I agree.
Do you think what movie do you think is better? Would you go with Sarah Marshall or Get Him to the Greek?
Hands down, Sarah Marshall.
Yeah,
Sarah Marshall.
I think so. I think we're all in agreement on that.
Not
one.
Even a question in my
okay.
mind.
Okay, all right. I was just asking.
It's
know?
Because of Jason
Don't
Segel.
Don't shoot the messenger.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, I think Jason Segel is he's the character that you can connect with, and he's someone you can empathize with through the entire film.
Yeah.
And Jonah Hill, you're just kind of like, okay, let's see what situation this guy gets into.
Yeah, and as a writer, I feel like Segel populated Sarah Marshall with believable situations, even though the concept of Sarah Marshall is a bit ludicrous, where he breaks up with his girlfriend and decides to go to Hawaii for a vacation, and his ex-girlfriend ends up being at that same resort, is kind of a, if you look at that on paper, you'd be like, oh, come on, like, get out of here, that's a ridiculous
seen
concept.
Seen it before, probably.
But that movie makes it feel believable and organic, and Get Him to the Greek doesn't have that same type of
serendipity.
Yeah, the same type of way for us to buy into the action. The same type of hook, even, really. It's just, Get Him to the Greek is a lot more A to B. It's very simple.
Yeah.
You know, even the title itself just tells us the thesis of the film. This is what is supposed to happen, so.
I think that surprisingly, though, I enjoyed the film. I'd give it probably like a B minus. Surprisingly, P. Diddy was funny in this movie.
I was about to say something about that.
Yeah.
I enjoyed him. It was weird because there were a few moments where it felt like he was in a different movie.
Yeah.
That was slightly funnier
than
the movie we were currently watching.
That's a really
I didn't
good
think about
you
it.
Because you cut
that
to
way.
Him and you're like, why is he doing that? And you're like, my goodness, just no ego.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In himself. Because there's a few moments where you're just like, you usually don't see him. You imagine this. You have these commercials where he's like drinking stuff, and he's you know, was it says his
Ciroc,
Ciroc.
And yeah.
And so you're like, he's like, he's slick, and he's like, and there's moments where like he's talking, I think with Pharrell,
yeah,
and he's making fun of Pharrell, calling him Carlton from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and he's calling him, saying you're one zipper away from being in Thriller, and I thought that was unbelievably hilarious, and it was such a short scene. I was like, that is a different movie.
Yeah.
Let's spin off the spin-off. Let's see where that goes.
That actually might be entertaining to watch. But Dr. Bengel, what did you think about Sean P. Diddy Combs?
He stole the show. Every scene he was in, he was hilarious. And everyone I've talked to that has seen the movie says that he was just awesome. I honestly did not think he was going to be that funny.
Yeah.
But that guy should be a comedian.
He's done cameos and he's done acting bits in other films, but I feel like this is his most, like, his funniest performance.
And I think this is his most open. I mean, it seems like he does have the possibility of being a really good actor. Seeing him in like Monsters Ball, he has the ability to. He has some range in there.
Yeah.
So
people don't give him enough credit, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's only. You really have to, I think, have to work really, really hard to go from music and acting and be taken very seriously.
Yeah,
that's true.
And vice versa.
So, obviously we all recommend this to our audience.
Yeah, I'd recommend it. Personally, I would say maybe don't see it in the theater, because it's not necessarily... The kind of crazy aspects of it work well on a theater, but it's not a necessity, I don't think. I would recommend it to anyone.
Watch it with friends,
though. Yeah, to watch it with friends as a rental. I wouldn't necessarily say, especially in a summer like this. Honestly, this summer is kind of weak so far.
Tend to leapfrog in terms of good years.
Yeah. So I don't know if I would recommend, if I would say, oh, go see this just because it's the best thing in theaters right now. You know, there's no reason to settle. Just wait for Inception or something that actually demands a theatrical experience.
Or A-Team.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think I'd recommend it. You know, go see it. I mean, this weekend's going to be hard because there's a couple other good movies coming out. So, you know, whatever. But, yeah, definitely if you get a chance and you want to see... If you want to see a comedy, then, yeah, check it out. Now, if Get 'Em to the Greek... that's a spinoff from Forgetting Sarah Marshall. And I think it was a pretty successful spinoff. I think, you know, they took this character and they did something good with him. They built a good film around him that made everybody laugh. Now, the question is, will this same thing work for Tom Cruise and Les Grossman? Will they be able to take Tropic Thunder's asshole director or producer, Les Grossman, who's done... You know, he had little parts in the movie. He wasn't, like, really a main character. He was kind of just... He was a secondary character in the film. And then he did these MTV Movie Award promo spots and then did something on the show last night, like, did some kind of dance with some chick. I don't know. I didn't watch it. I don't watch the MTV Movie Awards. And now, while he was at the awards in the backstage, E! Online asked him if he was going to get a movie going, and he said, "Yeah, we're actually working on developing it." So this looks like it's something that's going to happen. Question is, will it be successful, or will it be too much Les Grossman? What do you guys think?
I never saw Tropic Thunder, but I saw the MTV Movie Awards last night, and I'll agree that he's funny, but I don't know if you can get a whole movie out of that character.
I don't see how I could watch it without being annoyed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see him. I don't think it'll work. I think that too much of him
could
get annoying.
Yeah, exactly.
It's got to be something where you take little doses here and there. You can only take so much at a time. If you overload yourself, is it going to be too much? Is it going to kill that character for you? Instead of liking him after you watch the movie, will you be like, oh, that movie sucked. I hate this character now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I absolutely know what you mean, and I think to some degree I felt that with Get Him to the Greek. With Alda Snow, I liked the character in Sarah Marshall, like Mazur was saying, and I think the reason the character worked so well in Forgetting Sarah Marshall was because Jason Segel, as the writer, showed restraint in having him appear only in certain sections of it and kind of enhancing the comedy because of that and not overkilling it. And this movie, Get Him to the Greek, just features him so heavily that I don't think that he's a well-rounded enough character to actually hold the film on his own, which is why they had to partner him with the kind of straight guy, Jonah Hill. To what you're saying, though, I don't think I ended up... I know for a fact I didn't walk out of Get Him to the Greek hating Alda Snow's character. And I don't think I would walk out of a Les Grossman film hating Les Grossman's character. But it's just the matter of whether or not it's necessary to do it.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it sounds like they're going to do it.
I'm actually a little excited the more I think about what this film could be. I think Cruise is an intelligent enough actor to give dimension to this character. I just was thinking of the opening of his character's introduction in Magnolia, and he's just this magnanimous, manly, tame the bleep, you know. Yeah, you know, it's just that was his character, and then he's off. He's a completely different character, and he's got this energy and this weird thing, and you see different angles on this character, and you get to see him as this whole person. And I think Les Grossman could have that same element where you could see this person from different angles and kind of get to know him, and maybe in some ways get to know Tom Cruise, you know. But yeah. I think there is so much that they know on the inside of Hollywood that could have the most funny inside jokes,
yeah.
And so many things that they could point the finger in fun of,
yeah.
And because it's Tom Cruise, he can get away with it, because if someone else tried to make fun of A or B, they would kill him, but because he's Tom Cruise, he can get away with it.
I think that's a really great point. I think, especially with Cruise being as engulfed in that culture as he has been for so long, they could really do a great satire.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, you know, like a Grinch-ish character. They'll just put him in these moments where it could be, if there's a good script, it could be really good. But I think it's hilarious that to earn back our love and loyalty, Tom Cruise has to get fat and bald
and play
and,
like a
and
total
loud
ass.
And obnoxious. For us to like him again.
He's really playing to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
But it's funny. Like, I'm not going to say that he's not funny as that character. So, whatever he's doing seems to be working. But I think you're right. If they handle a Les Grossman film in the proper way, it could be very,
yeah.
very funny.
But I would say it would be extremely difficult. It's like threading a needle. You
yeah.
could very easily screw the whole thing. It could be terrible.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah.
I think this will probably, if they do it, it'll go through a dozen test screenings just to get the right cut for it.
Yeah.
All right. So there you have it. Why don't we talk about Christopher Nolan. There's a couple little things regarding the Joker, saying he's not going to bring him back for the third Batman film, and also talks about David Goyer's Superman concept. Why don't we jump into this? What do you guys think? I think it's obvious we weren't going to see Joker. I think he made that clear from the very, you know, after Heath Ledger died, and even the idea of the Joker coming back was just something I don't think he was willing to do.
I think it just would show such a disrespect for his performance, because the only way you could match it would be to imitate it.
Yeah,
and to ask an actor to imitate Heath Ledger's performance, you just couldn't do it.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think his performance will definitely influence future Jokers, but I think they will obviously be different takes.
Yeah, I think that I was wrestling, after I saw the movie, I wrestled with the idea like of how they're going to bring Joker back. If they were going to bring him back, because just recasting Joker would be nearly impossible, I feel. And but then again, it's such a great character that you really want to bring him into the next film. So I wrestled with it back and forth, and I'm fine. I've come to the conclusion that I'm fine with him being left out of the third film.
I think something like. Two things real quick. One, I heard fan speculation that maybe Michael Shannon would be recast as the Joker, and there's absolutely no basis in that that speculation at all, but for the record, I think it would work. I think he would be a great Joker.
I heard Daniel Day-Lewis at one point.
That would be ridiculous, but very good also, I feel like.
I know Abe Roman was rallying for, I forgot the actor's name, he's in The Road.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
He's in The Road?
Not The Road. He's in Revolutionary Road.
Oh yeah, that's Michael Shannon. That's the same guy. Yeah, yeah. So aside from that, I think Nolan and everybody involved with that film they're too close to it. They're not going to bring the Joker back because of their relationship with Ledger and how personal of an experience that was for them, and like how deep that loss hit home for them.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, I completely am fine with them not doing it. Although, as P. Vader says, eventually somebody's going to have to bring that character back because he's
too
great.
And it'll be Batman will be rebooted again, and they'll say, "Hey, let's make the Joker a villain again." Because that's never been done before.
And there's something else that I wanted to mention was, as P. Vedder was also saying, a way that I was kind of personally wrestling with, like, oh, how could they get away with showing this character? And, you know, I didn't come up with this by any means, but there's some talk about maybe featuring the Joker running some sort of mastermind operation out of Arkham and just being like a shadowy figure kind of in the vein of Moriarty from Sherlock Holmes. Actually saw that character, you know, we never saw, it was just the shadowy presence, you know?
Yeah.
But the Joker is just too dynamic of a character.
And he loves doing it himself.
Yeah, to be confined to that environment. But that being said, the only other thing that I can think of to kind of inject his personality in would be to feature Harley Quinn in the next film. Which I think could work in Nolan's reality-fused Gotham that he's created.
Yes,
but,
agreed.
But then again, Harley Quinn is so attached to the Joker character that it might come off as a bit strange showing her, like featuring her for a full film and not showing him, you know? So.
Alright. So why don't you tell us a little bit about this David Goyer Superman concept?
Yeah, there was a Empire magazine recently did an interview with Nolan, and he was basically saying, just kind of going into a little bit more explanation about David Goyer's take on Superman, and basically they were sitting around kind of trying to break the story idea for Batman 3 a while back, and David Goyer kind of out of nowhere was like, "Hey man, I came up with this idea if you want to bring Superman to the big screen, I came up with an idea for how you can do it." And Nolan in his interview doesn't really give too many details away as is his
nature.
Habit. But he says, I'll read the quote here. It says, "I thought it was really tremendous. It was the first time I'd been able to conceive of how you would address Superman in a modern context. I thought it was a very exciting idea. What you have to remember with both Batman and Superman is what makes these the best superhero characters there are, the most beloved after all this time, is the essence of who these characters were when they were first created and when they were first developed, and you can't ever move too far from that." End quote. So,
could you please read that back in an English accent?
That's where Abe Froman comes in. Unfortunately, I can't take over that role for him. But, the thing that people kind of latched onto was the soundbite or the quote from this that people latched onto was addressing Superman in a modern context. And then the speculation just began from that point because, again, he really didn't tell us exactly how Goyer planned to do that. But, we've talked about Smallville on this podcast before, and I think as ridiculous as Smallville has gotten over the past couple years, I think it has shown some flashes of brilliance as far as handling Superman in a modern context. I think I think that's one of the very few aspects that the show has actually done of well over the past couple years.
They don't. He's not Superman. He's the blur.
Yeah.
No one knows what he looks like.
Yeah.
And that seems like the only realistic and plausible way for Lois Lane never to know who Superman is.
Yeah.
Because he's always a blur.
Yeah. So
stupid blurs.
I'm sure Goyer hasn't been
watching Smallville.
been copying ideas from the Smallville's writer's room, but this is a movie that we're going to see because of all the legal troubles with Warner Brothers and the Siegels and Schusters and all of this stuff with the rights to Superman. This is a movie that we're going to see sooner rather than later. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it has to be like out in theaters before 2013, and I think it's slated for 2012 right now. So this is something that luckily we don't have to just speculate on kind of a what-if scenario. We're actually going to see this film at some point. Nolan also did mention that he's not going to direct it, but it was something that he wanted to develop and then pass on to somebody with the right hand. So that is actually going to be, I think, some really interesting talk for us in the future as to who Nolan's kind of protege will be to step up and direct the Superman movie in a couple of years. Oh yeah!
Who do you guys think would be the right hand on a new Superman?
Man,
why would you ask that?
I'm just wondering.
Yeah,
it's a tough question, man.
What are you trying to do? Make us look like idiots?
Yeah, really putting us on the spot here. Honestly, James McTeague, who directed V for Vendetta and like Ninja Assassin, which I know wasn't really that great, but I really loved V for Vendetta, and I think he might be able to bring a bit of darkness to it, and especially if Goyer and if Jonathan Nolan write the Superman film, it's going to be hard for anybody to really screw it up because they're such great writers.
Yeah.
And the script is the most important aspect of any film because, it's the building block for it. So you just have to find somebody with a bit of style. So I would say James McTeague might be a good... and I know he was talking about his own version of it, so maybe there might be some connections there or something. Just as far as somebody who's plausible to direct it. As far as, like, fantasy directors or something, I couldn't even tell you who I would want.
I don't know, you could throw out names like that. After Ninja Assassin, I don't think I really want to see James McTeague direct anything again, to be honest with you.
I didn't see it, so that I can't.
Oh my gosh,
a terrible, terrible, terrible film.
It makes me wonder if there was someone else directing V for Vendetta that was like behind the scenes.
Ouch,
that's
insulting.
That is how bad Ninja Assassin. It seems like it was someone else.
Wow,
a completely different film. Who knows how influential the Wachowski brothers were on V?
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
They didn't produce Ninja Assassin. That was Joel Silver, right?
I believe they produced it as well. Yeah,
they produced it as well.
Yeah. Oh, Ninja Assassin.
Yeah.
No, they did not. I don't think. Yeah. They kind of let McTeague go with that one.
Yeah.
They produced V for Vendetta, and that's what you're talking about. Where
yeah.
Their hand might have been felt more than McTeague's. Is that what you're implying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Wachowski brothers would actually be interesting.
They would.
If they took the script from Nolan and Goyer and brought their attention to ridiculous detail and style and thinking through every technical detail and upping the visual bar, that it has to be done for Superman because we have yet to see Superman be Superman.
Yeah.
I
think the older films were limited by technology, and then Bryan Singer's film was limited by homage.
Yeah.
So we actually, I think you're right, we haven't actually seen like a Superman cut loose and full.
Yeah,
like,
we haven't seen
flesh.
Superman.
Yeah.
Become
and there's, I mean, we
really
have
Superman.
We have the, Superman 2 with Zod, but even then there's not really a battle that feels like, I mean, at the time I just remember watching it, as a kid and just being blown away at it, and going back and watching it now, it's hilarious. They even spoof part of it in Family Guy where he just rips off his shield and it's like this weird saran wrap thing that wraps the big guy, and like, oh, that was mildly annoying. Well, yeah, there's like all he was like in there, he can't like 50 different powers by the end of the second film.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So.
What about you, Dr. Magman? What do you think for a director for Superman?
Man, that's a good question.
McG.
Yeah.
The anti-McG.
Brett Ratner.
Who was the guy who directed Brokeback Mountain?
Ang Lee.
Ang Lee.
No.
I think that'd be interesting.
He already did the Hulk, though.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
But I don't like how he handles story. I'm sorry, but
nah.
You know what? I'd like to see Joe Johnston take it. I know he's directing Captain America.
Wow.
But he directed Rocketeer. You know.
I think you're putting a lot of faith in a movie that came out in 1991.
I don't care. I think he could bring a cool style to the movie.
I mean, that's true. If I feel like Joe Johnston circa 1992 could direct Superman pretty well, because The Rocketeer is very infused with Americana and has a very kind of classical style to it because it was based on those comics from like the 40s or
exactly,
whatever.
Exactly, exactly. And I think he could still do that if he's put in that mindset again, it's not like... I don't know. I think he's still got it. I think we're going to see something cool with Captain America.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right.
I think...
There might be
some possibility of up-and-coming directors, like the director of Tron and...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
Neil
definitely.
Blomkamp from District 9. There might be a director out there who has kind of the visual touch that might be perfect for this film. Because the story's in place, and if they're producing it, if no one's producing it, then, you know, the casting will be impeccable, so...
Yeah. I mean, that would be great to see, personally. I'm a huge fan of up-and-coming directors and seeing people get their big shot at it. And this, the Superman platform is about as big as you can get.
There could be a director out there who's been sitting on, like... There could be a director out there who's been sitting on a mountain of, you know, handmade, self-made Superman artwork he's been working on since he was 12 or something. Who might be the perfect director for this, but...
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. We'll see who ends up getting the director's chair in that film. Okay, so this weekend, we've got a couple new movies. I actually think there's only two movies coming out this weekend. One is The Karate Kid. This is the remake that is starring... what's his name?
Jaden Smith.
Jaden Smith. That's Will Smith's son. Will Smith produced The Karate Kid remake. He's taking the classic 1980s...
You're leaving out Jackie Chan, dude.
Huh?
Jackie Chan.
Oh, he's in that movie too?
Yeah, he's in that film.
That's interesting.
Plays Mr. Miyagi.
No, he's not.
Or the Mr. Miyagi character. I don't even know if they share the same name. But
No, they don't. I think his name's like Mr. Chan or something like that. You know, let's just go stereotypical.
He just plays himself.
I seem to be the only person excited about The Karate Kid.
Yeah.
When I first saw the trailer, it looked better than I expected it to look. I'll give it that. And I'll probably take my kids to go see it. Because I like the original movie. They like the original movie. They see the trailer. They get excited. Oh, The Karate Kid. Yeah, let's go see The Karate Kid. So, you know, I'll end up seeing The Karate Kid. It's not
I need to watch it so I can tell my wife if they say, sweep the leg, Johnny, and if he does the crane at the end.
And if they play, you're the best around.
Yes.
See,
in the background.
See, you come into that, and you watch the original movie, and the music and everything. It's not going to be the same, guys.
You have to understand that. I mean, your kids probably have zero nostalgia for the original Karate Kid.
I know.
Zero. So.
True.
Jaden Smith was just so annoying in The Day After Tomorrow.
Oh, such a bad actor.
I don't want him to have that kind of same. I don't want Dr. Brinkman's children to be nostalgic for the Jaden Smith version down the line.
That's what I'm saying, right?
Because
I see all
of
actors,
how bad he
all
was.
Actors do something terrible, and that was for everyone. That was a terrible film.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I'm going to see it.
What were you thinking
with that
film, by the way?
And we'll end up telling you how it was.
What was John Hamm doing there? He was just there.
Oh, man. Bad stuff.
But I got to say, the Geek Tyrant pick of the week is going to be The A-Team.
Yes.
This movie looks like it's going to be awesome.
Do you think so, really?
Action-packed. Just everything that you liked about the original TV show is going to be included in this. It's just going to be over the top, silly. It's going to be a big budget movie version of the original TV show.
I actually never watched the original show. It was before my time.
Well, it was awesome. And missed out on a great, great TV series.
What were you saying, Maisie? You heard somebody attack?
Yeah, someone was actually attacking, and they had grown up with the series, and they had watched pretty much every episode, and they were talking about how he doesn't want there to be a big blockbuster film. He talked about how he didn't like the casting of certain people. I was just like, okay, then don't watch the film. I feel like some people's memory of the A-Team is better than it actually was. If you go and watch a TV Land episode or find it on Hulu, it was not that good.
It's still awesome. You just shut your mouth, sir.
They show up to the exact same deserty place
every episode,
and for some reason find junk laying around every episode.
And in every episode, something blows up. There is military being...
And they retrofit that van.
They are blowing things up, setting things on fire, shooting everything but people, you know, because on TV, they're not allowed to shoot each other. So you just see these little pings all around them, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, good times. Good times.
I'm excited
for the movie, so...
I love it top to bottom. I love who they cast.
The cast actually does look kind
of
cool.
I love the style. I love the... It feels like it has the right type of comedy for it. It's not serious, but it's not wacky.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely has potential. Well, I'll put it that way. It looks ridiculous, and I was telling P. Vader this. I keep going back and forth every time I see a TV spot or a trailer of, like, whether it is... too ridiculous or just the right amount of ridiculous. I'm seeing
just the right amount of ridiculous.
I think I'm coming down on that side of the fence with you, Dr. Ringman.
I think it has like that type of perfect balance, like the Oceans film had. It's like, man, these guys are cool and they're doing cool stuff, and they put in these little wisecrack moments. It's like overly saturated in color. It just looks so cool.
And I think Jessica Biel's line of "they specialize in the ridiculous" just cemented it further for me. All right, you guys have convinced me. I'm excited.
See, you're in. I knew it.
So, hopefully, we'll all get a chance to check that out and talk about it next week.
Definitely. Anyway, besides that, we're just going to wrap up here. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes because you can do that. We'd appreciate it if you did, and if you don't. Probably won't know.
Leave us a comment on iTunes too. Tell us what you think of the show.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have someone actually tell us how we're doing. Fan us on Facebook at facebook.com/geektyrantfans. And then there's Twitter at Geek Tyrant. Join us on Twitter. Follow us. We're always doing updates. Just keeping in contact with our peeps. And did I just say peeps? Why did I say peeps?
Because we're talking peeps. About Twitter. You can't talk about Twitter with a straight face. I have trouble doing it in normal conversation.
I looked up how much it would cost because we're in June now. And you can get a carton of, I think it's 16.5 groupings of peeps off their website.
The Easter candy.
And you can get them for like 17 bucks. But they're like limited in color, and like as time goes on, I see colors disappearing. I think they're down to like the pink chicks and the bunnies in a few different colors. But yeah, I don't know why I looked that up.
So yeah, make sure you hit us up on all those social network platforms, and
if you invent one, tell us about it.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great. We could be the first supporters of it.
Exactly. Awesome. But I just want to thank all of you for listening. We really appreciate it. It's always nice to know that people listen to our podcast. Other than that, have fun at the movies when you go to them. Have fun reading the site. Come back. You know it's always being updated, so we're doing the best we can to keep the news rolling in. And entertaining you as best we can. And we will see you next week. So goodbye, everybody.
Bye.